morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig.
And Ann's a little croaky today.
Yeah, I don't understand why. There's no reason for me to be croaky.
Did you follow a frog? Did you follow a frog?
there'll be reason.
That's a very subtle hint about what's coming later in the program. You'll never guess.
I don't even want to mention.
You don't even want to mention that. Okay. Well. Anyway, there's a very important celebration in the calendar of the Irish of the world coming up very soon on March 17, I think it is.
Yeah, you better believe it.
So in celebration of St. Patrick's Day and in celebration of a fine contribution to the world of cooking and cooking literature, we have one famous TV personality as well as an author, Clodagh McKenna.
Right.
Calling all the way from Dublin.
Right.
To talk about Irish cuisine in general and specifically about her activities and a cookbook that she just released on that subject. So here's Clodagh.
Well, you know, we interviewed Dorina Allen, and she was booked as the Alice Waters of Ireland. And now we're interviewing Clodagh McKenna of Clodagh's Kitchen Diaries, which is the name of her new book. And she has been described as Rachel Ray of Ireland. What do you think about that one, Clodagh?
Well, of course, I'm very flattered. Rachel Ray is a wonderful TV presenter and TV cook, so I was very flattered by it. But when it was actually Forbes magazine that said that, and when it was printed, I didn't know who Rachel Ray was then. But then a year later, there I was on her show. I was on her show last year.
Oh, okay.
Well, now, you're quite an ambassador for Ireland. How did this all come about?
Oh, well, thank you. I take that with great pride. It came about after I trained as a chef. There weren't many farmers markets in Ireland at the time, and I wanted to develop farmers markets in Ireland. I felt it was somewhere there where we could create a wonderful food revolution and have an outlet for where people could come and meet producers and where producers could actually experiment and get startups going. And so I got involved with developing farmers markets, and indeed I actually set up my own store there as well, where I used to sell everything from pâtés to fresh pasta with Irish wild nettle in it and everything. So it was an incredible time. And then I also got involved in Slow Food, and I was running the Slow Food Ireland chapter.
Certainly blessed with absolutely amazing product. We've been to Ireland twice in the last 2 years, and I was just overwhelmed by the quality of the product.
Yeah, the quality of the food is really good. We have really clean food in Ireland, which is what I like to call it. It's very naturally produced with great natural resources. And then also we have this wonderful surge of young artists and producers who are very dedicated to looking after and almost like nourishing the food culture in Ireland. So it's a really exciting time for food in Ireland.
Yeah, well, we experienced that, of course, in Dublin, but I was amazed we experienced it really strongly in Galway.
Galway has historically been a market town, and you probably got to go to the market there, did you?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
There's an excitement and a vibrancy in the market in Galway that you can't find anywhere else. It's got this real rawness about it, which I love. And there's so many, I think, when you get a really wonderful farmer's market going in the center of a small city or a town, it kind of like creates a wonderful kind of food hub. When you have restaurants that are coming down to tasting the food, then they start taking it on their menu. And I think it's almost like the starting point to any good food culture growing in a town.
Now, you have a huge part of TV. You've got restaurants, plural. Tell us what you do. I mean, you do everything, don't you?
What really excites me is the people that I work with. I have a really fantastic creative team that I work with. And every day there's something new going on. I mean, we have an office where I have a little hub of these kind of wonderful creatives that work with me, and we work on menus, you know, for the restaurants, or menus change every 3 months, whether it be in the bakery or the food court or indeed the restaurant. I also do kind of a lot of TV. We're actually filming a whole new series for PBS specifically in September, which will be fun. And I have a column at the Times as well, the Irish Times, and there's always new things going on. I'm doing a pop-up in New York, actually.
Are you
with
really?
Danny Meyer.
You have a little chapter, and you see, I'm also an admirer of Danny's. I love Danny Meyer.
Danny Meyer seems so good to me, and he's another wonderful person who really helps cultivate other people and other businesses. He's so generous and has been very good to me. So I'm doing a pop-up with him in his Untitled restaurant in the Whitney Museum on Saturday the 16th of March, which is the day before St. Patrick's.
It's a good time right there.
You're showing signs of madness. You're coming to the city which has probably the second largest St. Patrick's Day parade in the world and the largest in the United States.
I know, right? I know. I think I'm probably attracted to madness.
have you never been to that? I mean, it's like amazing. You just wouldn't believe it. Because on all day, every minute, and it blocks the whole city. It's just amazing.
I'm really excited about creating a really cool content. Like, the menu is very, very contemporary. It's called the Irish Elements menu.
Tell us some of the items on your menu.
Well, basically what we're trying to do is transport New York diners to an Irish table. And so I've taken all of the elements that I feel kind of represent Ireland for me. So, like, some of the dishes are, for example, we have bacon and cabbage is the name of one of the dishes. And what it is it's slow-braised pig's cheeks with beautiful spiced braised red cabbage. And the next one then would be, for example, poutine and salmon, where we're home curing and making beautiful gravlax. Another one is rhubarb and seaweed, where we're doing a rhubarb compote, you know, sitting on top of cardoon moss. And so it's going to be really interesting and beautiful menu. I hope that people will get a taste of the contemporary cuisine that's happening in Ireland right now.
Now, there's a wonderful Irish dish called Colcannon. Now, what is that? You undoubtedly have a recipe for it in a book, but what's it made of?
Colcannon is basically, it's really creamy mashed potatoes, and then in with this, you can actually fold in either spring onions or scallions, or else shredded cabbage into it as well. So it depends on what you try to do it. Actually, in my book, Kitchen Diaries, I have potato cakes. Because I have restaurants, I'm always thinking of presentation as well and textures and food. So I love Colcannon cakes as well, because you get a lovely crispiness on the outside, and then you've got that lovely creaminess in the inside, which is the mash. Sometimes I feel that mash can be slightly a little bit boring, so I kind of like to shape it up a little bit and turn it into a really nice patty.
Well, now, if that's Colcannon, what's a boxty?
A boxty, then, basically, is a very traditional dish to Dublin, specifically. And it's grated potatoes.
Okay, so it's grated potatoes, okay.
Yeah, grated potatoes, and you do it on a frying pan. Now, you can either make a kind of a flat boxty, but traditionally they're made actual in boxes, kind of a box shape on it. Yeah, they look great. There's actually even a boxty restaurant in Dublin that just does all boxties.
Well, Clodagh, we mentioned that your book is called Clodagh's Kitchen Diaries, and you take a diary format with it, and it's subtitled Delicious Recipes Throughout the Year. Could you tell, this has ties in with your philosophy of food, could you tell us a little bit about how you organized this book?
Yeah, I wanted to create basically like a companion in the kitchen. When you're in January, for example, and it's cold outside, you're not really enthused or kind of comforted by, you'll say, cold salads or ice cream desserts. So basically, the dishes for every month complement the kind of food that's available seasonally and also the food that your body craves at that time of the year. So, for example, in July, I have a whole 4th of July big barbecue that we also celebrate here in Ireland. These are all barbecue food. March, for example, it's all about St. Patrick's Day. April then is all about Easter. And because I lived in so many different countries, I lived for 3 years in Italy, I lived in America, I lived in France, and every summer there growing up,
You even have Asian influences in recipes.
Yeah, a couple, not a huge amount, but a couple of them I do, because I do like Asian food as well, but predominantly my food is the recipes I really love are Italian and French. And then what I tend to do then is I localize them to what's available to me seasonally. So the recipes are inspired by fans in Italy, and then the produce that I use then is local to me here in Ireland.
Now, you've also got lots of puddings in there. I guess it wouldn't be an Irish cookbook if you didn't have lots of puddings, and you certainly have lots of those.
I do. I am a lover. I do have a street cheese, I have to admit. And actually, I have a bakery as well, where we make really delicious shoe buns and cupcakes and all sorts of cakes. So all of the recipes that we do in our bakery, I've told you about. So we have a famous car cake recipe, we have delicious cheesecakes called bread and butter pudding, chocolate cake, my chocolate birthday cake. Every birthday, I always have a chocolate cake. And it's like my one big thing every year. It's like the death of all chocolate cakes. It's amazing. So the book is really fun, and it's really user-friendly. The recipes, I spent a lot of time on the recipes where there's no complicated recipes in there. They're all foolproof. There's not a long list of ingredients in the dishes. I feel myself, I cook slightly different in the restaurant than I do at home. So when I get home in the evening, I want to be able to make as easy as possible, but also as delicious as possible. So that's what the recipes are. They're really user-friendly, easy to make.
Now, I want a taste of your mum's Christmas pudding.
Oh, yeah. I'll send you one next Christmas. I promise you that.
Okay. Now, is there a...
No, there wouldn't be any whiskey in there, would
no,
there?
No, I don't think there's whiskey.
No whiskey in
there? No, yeah, I'm sure there is.
No Jamesons in there, all Bushmills or whatever.
Well, I mean, how would you characterize overall your recipes? They're personalized, but you approach them with a modern perspective. What are some of the things you do to contemporize these recipes that are really traditional for the most part?
I guess, for example, if we're looking at Patrick's Day, bacon and cabbage can be really lovely, but it's not something that I would kind of cook normally at home. So, for example, how I can contemporize that one a little bit is with my bacon and cabbage soup, where the base of the soup basically is pancetta, or you can use Irish smoked bacon, tomato, garlic, dried oregano, and then I put some stock into it, and then I put in shredded cabbage into it, and it's absolutely delicious. So it's kind of like an Italianized version of bacon and cabbage soup. So delicious.
Well, I think that you were thriving in a really rich food community in Ireland. With the produce you have and the interaction with all the chefs that are there with all that talent now and people eager to actually sample. They're beginning to understand Irish food better. Now, my husband, that was a throwback. I mean, he's happy to just have the bread, the soda bread, the brown soda bread.
Yeah, we lived on soda bread. We eat very little bread the rest of the year, but when we were in Ireland, we ate soda bread every day. It was so terrific.
Isn't it delicious with just Irish butter and some marmalade? Oh.
And then, of course, you can put Guinness in just about any braise, and it will be delicious. I noticed you had a Guinness braise in your recipe book, and I'm doing a lot of things with winter vegetables and dark beer just now.
Yeah, exactly. I always feel like Guinness, especially for stews, etc., it gives a lovely, if you let it stew a long time, like still cook on your stove a long time, it gives a lovely kind of coffee-esque and caramely flavour to you, especially beef.
Yeah, I did a lamb recipe the other day with dark beer, and I thought it was really good. Now, do you have an Irish stew recipe in your book?
I do. It's actually my mom's as well. I've mixed quite a few dishes from my mom.
Good.
So that recipe is, I mean, the traditional dishes, I think, like plum puddings and minced meat for your mince pies, and also, let's say, the Irish stew. All of those recipes are recipes that have been handed down to me from my grandmother and then on to my mother and then on to me. But I really love keeping up the tradition. In Ireland, every family has their own way of making Irish stew. It's like a pasta dish initially, I think.
Well, listeners, obviously, the book is called
Clodagh's Kitchen Diaries. And Clodagh, I just wish you all the continued success in the world. You have such your respect and enthusiasm for your culture and your cuisine. And keep up the good work.
And people can follow you, I'm sure, with details about the March 16th event and everything else you're up to when you're in New York around St. Patrick's Day.
And what about the website? Let's do that.
ClodaghMcKenna.com.
One word. ClodaghMcKenna.com. So everybody follow you.
Thank you. So I'm also on Twitter at ClodaghMcKenna.com. But thank you so much. You've been so lovely to speak with.
And we'll be back with a trip down memory lane right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Here we are again, and basically from time to time, we have such a rich archive of interviews dating back to
2004. Of course, many of you know that anyway, because you probably trot around in them all the time.
Yeah, but for those who may have missed some of them, periodically we're moved to resurrect them. And why are we resurrecting these, Rabbit?
Well, it's interesting. First of all, it crossed our minds that we were talking to Paris about somebody, or we were talking to Paris between ourselves, I can't remember which it was, and we realized that it was more than 4 years since the last time we were there, and we produced what we considered at the time to be a great program, and we still think it's a great program, not only about some fine restaurants in France, but also some wonderful research into the future of food with Dr. Hervé Tisse, also in Paris at the same time. And especially significant, we were reminded, because the time we were there, Europe was celebrating, and many Americans were celebrating, the fact that Obama had just been elected president of the United States as the first African-American, which was pretty thrilling.
With the headlines on OTM.
There is. We had a brunch party celebrating with some friends in Paris.
Were bagels and Obama.
But isn't it wonderful to know that we succeeded in reelecting this remarkable president, and I'm sure they're celebrating again in Europe. So here's a program from November 23.
Which is really about food.
2008. Which is about food with the spice of a little politics along with it. So for the rest of the program, that's what you're going to hear, in case you missed it then. And if you heard it then, I'm sure you've forgotten about it, and you'll be delighted to hear it again.
Bonjour, Laurent Jacquet.
Bonjour. Bienvenue, Anne. Bienvenue, Peter.
And we are at the Atelier Maître Robert, also part of the Guy Savoy Group. And this is a wonderful place.
Thank you.
You can smell the fire in the fireplace.
Yes.
How is this different from the other restaurants in the family of Guy Savoy restaurants?
This one, it's very simple. It's a rôtisserie. It's a kind of rôtisserie, just a specialty food, French food. It's a very classic, very old cook. It's very simple. But we have two rôtisseries in the restaurant behind the fireplace, and the ambience is very simple. It's very very light, very good ambience.
That's good. Mm. Well, we're now in the wine room. Is this a wine tasting bar?
No, the name is the Vinothèque. It's just a different ambience of the restaurant. We are the bar, yes, you want to drink something, a glass of champagne, a glass of wine, it will be possible, of course. But normally it's a dining room or lunch room, but it's the same thing on the fireplace dining room.
I see. Mm. Tell us a little bit about how you got here. You've been with some really good chefs, haven't you? Now, you are the manager of this establishment.
Yes.
But how did you start out? Now, you're from the culinary mecca of the universe, Lyon, right?
Yes. I thought with a few years ago now, it's with the Guy Savoy and another big chef like Trois Gros and Loustoute Beaumanière in the Beaute-Provence. It's a very famous three-star Michelin. It's a good school for me and for my chef. And I think now with a good experience, and it's very appreciated for special rôtisserie food.
Yeah, and listeners, if you hear the sound going in and out, it's because Laurent is a true Frenchman and speaks and gestures with his hands. Anyhow, you're a charmer.
Thank you.
Now, you actually worked in London to perfect your English. Where did you work in London? In a hotel?
It's a St. James Court Hotel. It's Buckingham Gate, near the Buckingham Palace, and between Buckingham Palace and the Victoria Street. It's an Indian group. Okay. It's a Taj Hotel. It's very famous.
Right.
Yes. And the small it's a fresh restaurant inside, and the name is L'Auberge de Provence. It's the same family of the Loustoute Beaumanière. Mm-hmm. In the Beaute-Provence, it's French food and Provençal food and ambiance. Yes.
Now you like London, but you're really fond of Gordon Ramsay, you said.
Yes, because it's a friend of me. I work with him and the maybe 20 years ago in a restaurant Guy Savoy. It's a very good experience. But it's, yes.
He was in Guy Savoy.
Yes, yes, yes,
I forgot that. Yeah.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
In a patisserie and me in a room in the, it's a good experience. It's a simple personage. But before, now it's very.
Yeah, well, now he's not so simple. Is he as energetic as he seems?
Sorry?
Energetic?
Energetic.
Yeah.
Who?
Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, yes, now. Yes.
But not then. So he was a likable person. He is a likable person, Gordon Ramsay.
In Bonhomme. 20 years ago, yes. Now I don't know. because it's, I think it's a bon. It's a very big chef, famous, and it celebrates actor the London place.
How long were you in London?
Oh, 20 years ago.
But how long did you stay?
One year.
Okay. Mm. So now we're back in Paris, and you work for a three Michelin star chef. In a charming place. Tell us how this menu, besides being rotisserie, classic French rotisserie, what happens at lunch and what happens at dinner? They're two very different experiences.
Yes, because when you open this restaurant, we opened the restaurant only for the dinner. For the lunch, it was closed. Because it's le quartier latin, it's very quiet for the lunch. There is no business building, just a few tourists. But it's very quiet. We have a special lunch menu.
I'm looking at it on a giant slate.
It's very simple, not expensive. You have the four choice before for starter, for the main course, and for the dessert. The first choice, you have the saladier du moment, et voilà, it's just a green mixed salad, say, with a chicken liver sauteed in a pan.
It's
very nice.
What's the second one?
Crème de panais. The panais, they're like old vegetables. It's like same family of the carrots, but it's a big one. White. It's a little sugar inside. It's very, very nice. It's a soup. Huh?
It's not like parsnip. Is it parsnip?
No. The name is the old vegetables.
Okay.
It's a vegetable, les anciens végétables, anciens légumes. And a canard mi-cuit chou craquant mangue, it's a thin slice of duck, just marinated in salt. It's like it's not cooked, huh? It's marinated in salt.
I know about that. That's a technique we encountered yesterday. Cooked with salt.
Voilà.
And then with salmon tartare.
With the duck, you have the green cabbage and the mango.
Sugar
and salt. And after, you have the salmon tartare with celery sever. You have the celery vinaigrette and the celery mousse. This is a choice for the starter. And for the main course, you have the volaille fermière rôti, pomme purée. It's a chicken, roasted chicken. It's come from the land. It's a yellow chicken, just roasted à la rôtisserie, so with mashed potatoes, classic one, but it's my favorite. I think it's the best in Paris.
Uh-huh. Here.
Maybe,
So we're pushing the mashed potatoes, huh?
Yes.
All right. I'm happy with the mashed potatoes. No truffles in them,
no. No truffle there. In the restaurant Guy Savoy, you have no truffle in the mashed potatoes. Alors, tranche de carré de porc, it's a fillet of pork, roasted in the rotisserie. So with my favorite gratin, it's mixed spinach and mushrooms.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's very, very nice to... It's my favorite. It's like a gratin. Huh? You have the in the oven. After you have the dorade à la plancha. It's a sea bream fish. Just a grill. Very simple cooking. So with the leeks gratin, perfumed with the parmesan cheese.
Those poivreaux is leeks.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you have
the pavé de cabillaud. It's a cod fish.
Cod.
It's a slice of cod. Just also green. The grill. So with the gratin de penne, it's a pasta. It's very nice also. And for the dessert, you have three desserts and one cheese. The cheese, it's comté autour de la pomme. It's a thin slice of Comté. So with the green salad and the different tasting of the apple. You have the apple, crispy apple, apple, fresh apple, and apple marmalade. And for the dessert, you have the chocolate dessert. It's fondant au chocolat, pralin feuilleté. It's a black chocolate fondant. So with a praline crispy and a chicory sauce. But it's not chicory, it's a coffee sauce.
Coffee sauce.
Yeah. Terrine de pamplemousse sauté, it's a grapefruit terrine with a tea sauce, Earl Grey tea sauce. It's very, very light, very fresh, and it's very, very nice. And the last one, it's gratin de banane. It's the banana gratin, eggs and sugar.
This is lunch, and people can select off of it for one price, and they can have the whole selection of three courses.
Well, it's possible to, the price, it's a 29 euro for the free course and a 24 for starter main course or main course dessert. You know,
okay.
Let me show you some. And for the dinner, it's totally different. Huh?
Yeah, I have the dinner menu, and it is different. It seems a lot more complicated.
We have the five choice with we have the special of the day. Every day we have two more starter, two more dessert, and two more main course and two more dessert.
And you always
change
have
every
a
night.
Vegetarian plate.
And we have the vegetables. Yes, we have a very nice risotto with the mushrooms.
This looks good. Brochette de la, the spit roasted monkfish.
Yes, it's wonderful.
So what will the specials be for dinner tonight, just as an example?
Hello, my favorite in the moment, it's le jarret de veau à la broche. Jarret de veau, it's a split roasted veal shank, you know?
Oh, that sounds good.
Yes, it's just grilled à la rotisserie, so with the vegetables. It's my favorite in the moment. But you have the monkfish brochette, you have the tranche de bœuf, you have the beef slice of...
I'd like the... This one.
The codfish, yes.
Codfish
on cocotte.
Casserole,
yes.
With seasonal vegetables and mushrooms. That sounds really good.
It's very nice. And you have the two.
How big a wine?
We have a lot of wine. Yeah? We have 100 selections of different wine. You have all the regions. In France, huh? Yeah.
Right.
I don't have American wine
<No?
laughs> because we have a lot of French wine. But yes, you have the Côte du Rhône, you have the Côte de Provence, you have the Alsace, you have the Val de Loire. It's the Bordeaux, the Grand Cru. Yeah, yes, it's very.
Your attitude sort of matches the place. It's relaxed, cheerful, but basic.
Yes, it's a. I want everybody that's coming to take a good time, a good time for the food, for the decoration. The decorations, it's Jean-Michel Villemotte. It's a famous architect in Paris. Huh? Prepare the Louvre, two or three building in à la Défense. It's a very famous international architect, Jean-Michel Villemotte, and it's a good. Beautiful restaurant now.
Oh, he did that.
Yes.
Oh, boy. Great. Yeah, that's really lovely. Now, I think the atmosphere here is really very special, and it's a good place to come, listeners, and I'm looking forward to trying it. Now, Peter wants to know something.
Well, I just wanted to add something, that this is a place that would be a little bit hard to find unless you knew it was here, even though it's only 50 meters from the Quay or the kayak, not sure how it's pronounced, running along the south side of the Ile de la Cité, right opposite the southern branch of the Seine River at the Ile de la Cité. So it's a wonderful place, listeners, if you're in Paris, to stop for lunch.
And you have the view on the Notre Dame.
And then at dinner time, it's much busier, so reservations are recommended.
Yes.
And you have a special program that says you seat at. Go ahead and tell us about that.
You have two seatings, right?
Yes.
Every night.
Oh, we open at, so first seating, we open at 6:30 for the
That's
people.
That's unusual.
Normally the first seating, it's between 7:30 and 8 o'clock. And the second one's 9:30 and 10 o'clock. And the last order, it's 1 o'clock for the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evening. We are open every night, and Sunday also.
And I guess you're under the same website, the Guy Savoy.
Yes.
.com.
Exactly.
Well, we're looking forward to this, and it's a pleasure meeting you. Thank you
so much. Thank you to you, and you're really, really welcome in Paris in the restaurant. Really. Merci à vous.
Merci. Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Bonjour, Monsieur Cédric Josso. Did I get that right?
That's true. It's okay.
Anyhow, we are at Le Bouquiniste, and we're talking to the manager, and he's going to tell us a little bit about the family of restaurants by superstar chef Guy Savoy, and also about the individual characteristics of the Bouquiniste restaurant. Welcome to On the Menu, Cédric.
Thank you.
And you were manager here, but you've been around at a number of restaurants, haven't you?
Yeah.
You were in New York?
I used to work in New York, the Daniel Boulud, the old Daniel, on 65 between Park and Madison in New York.
And you like New York?
I like a lot.
And what did you do with Daniel?
I was a maitre d' at Daniel during 1 year and a half. And then I used to work for Guy Savoy before I came to New York. And then when I get back in Paris, he gave me the position here at Le Bouquiniste. But for me, it was the great experience to work in New York. And when I get back here to the Bouquiniste, in the 6th arrondissement, most of the people that you get Le Bouquiniste come from the States. So
a lot of visitors come here. Everybody raves about Danielle. I mean, he's probably one of the most decent human beings that I've ever known, and also a business mastermind. But also, he really supports his employees. That's something that's
true. It's very charming with the people who's working with him. Yeah.
Now, tell us a little about Guy Savoy.
I used to work for Guy Savoy like 10 years now. I starting with him in training period, and then I grew up. He's charming too. He's a good friend of Daniel, so that's why he told me to learn the English and to see something else. You have to go to the Daniel Boulud restaurant. And Guy Savoy is the owner of this place on the Atelier Maître Albert on the Shiberta. He's at the Caesar Palace in Vegas on 2009 in Moscow on 2000.
Moscow,
yeah.
Oh wow!
It's going to be the first big restaurant to restart in Moscow.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, what is his style? What is he known for as a chef? What is he known for, his style of cooking?
It's not like the new kitchen, you know, that all the people talking. He's taking care of the
classics?
Yeah, of the classics, you know. Mm-hmm. The one of the dish is the veal chop with the mashed potatoes puree with black truffles, mushrooms.
That sounds good. I may have it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good too. But one of this dish, you know, for him, it's very important to get the great meat from France,
you
know, from the good products. You know what I mean?
Right, producers.
From the producers. Yes. He's taking care a lot with the meat, with the vegetables, you know what I mean? With all the things that he's cooked, you know, he's taking care of the...
And, he has this family of restaurants. We're going to be interviewing at another one tomorrow. But what is the distinctive character of Le Bouquiniste?
Le Bouquiniste, it's, for us, it's not completely different that the Guy Savoy was doing on the three-star Michelin, but it's not like the Atelier Maître Albert where you're going to get tomorrow. It's a little bit more, you know, modern kitchen, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
We do fish, we do meat, but with something, you know, something funny in, you know what I mean?
Creative or innovative.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
We do, for example, that you are going to get later, maybe, the foie gras cook with the apple on the grapes, you know.
Oh.
We do the duck with the figs on the mashed potatoes puree with black truffles mushrooms.
Oh my, I'm
but
so hungry.
We put figs inside or grapes when is the season, you know.
Uh-huh.
We change the menu more than four times in a year, each season, and then in each season we change like one or more dish that we get a la carte.
Depending on what's the best in the market, right?
That's
produce, yeah. Now, well, just before we so we it doesn't get away from us. It's clear why, but you should say why it's called Les Bouquinistes.
It's called Les Bouquinistes because we are just, like you see just behind you, it's, that means the little store where the people sell books, so that's called Les Bouquinistes. We are just in Afonso.
And we look out the window, listeners, and out the river and the lined with these bookstalls. It's a lovely, lovely view, Cedric.
Yeah, that's true. It's, for me, it's the best situation to work, you know what I mean?
And it used to be spelled with a K, so I'm not, I said that, and then Peter said, no, it's it's not. But you said, yes, it was, so I'm not losing my mind. Yeah. You did have, it was spelled, tell us about that.
Yeah, we changed the name like more than 6 years now to get the word in French, in fact. You know what I mean? Because
yeah.
Before it was
English.
Like we call in English, and then we changed to get the French word that way.
I wanted to just ask you, when you were in New York, what other restaurants did you really like?
I did Ducasse, New York. You know the boss, Ducasse?
Yeah.
Where he sells steak, you know, the on the tree start like that he gets.
Yes.
That he used to get.
You didn't eat here in Ducasse, you ate it in New York.
In New York. Not in French, but in New York.
Oh, funny.
It was great experience. But in New York, you get like, for me, it's the big city to get all the thing that you can get in the world, you know. You can get the Chinese food, the Japanese food, the Vietnam food, you know what I mean?
But isn't Paris like that?
Not that much. Not that much. You get all the style cuisine, but not, you can compare with New York.
I think New York is the restaurant capital of the world.
That's true.
But Dubai's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're
Kisa was going to open a place in Dubai. You know, with Tiger Woods. It's going to be the Tiger Woods project.
With Guy Savoy.
Yeah.
I'll be darned. That's a good tip. That's good to know. Oh, yeah.
Pierre Gagnaire is in Dubai right now.
Yeah, Pierre Gagnaire is in Dubai
now.
Restaurant. It's going to be something. Yeah. It's an instant city. It's an instant metropolitan capital. It's amazing. Now, when you're in Paris and you're on your day off, where do you go to eat? Where do you eat in Paris on your day off when you're not working?
All the Sunday night, we are closed on Sunday. So Atelier Maître Albert, where you are going to be tomorrow. I go to the Alain Dutournier rest place too. It's called Pinxo.
Pinxo, okay.
Pinxo in Paris.
And it's Basque?
It's a Basque, yeah. That's
Pinxo is a...
Oh, you know that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Alain Dutournier, the chef, is getting like to start in France, and he's a chef too. He's a friend of Isawa too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you like tapas, the Basque tapas.
Pinxo, that means that you have to share with somebody else.
Oh, is that what it means?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we just were in the Basque country, and we ate at Arzac, and we
Spain?
Ate at all of them. Yeah, we were just there.
Arzac is in San Sebastian, right?
Yes.
Oh, it's a good place.
And
yeah.
Mujeriz was wonderful. And what was the other one? The one I can't pronounce, Berasategui.
Berasategui. Berasategui, yeah.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about, now you mentioned the veal, you mentioned some other things. Tell our listeners about your tasting menu.
Tasting menu, we pick up not the best dish that we get a la carte because everything is good, but to get like a nice menu, we start with the foie gras ballotine with the salt from Guérande. That means that the foie gras is only cooked by the salt from Guérande. You know, you put all the foie gras in the salt.
Right.
So that's the salt is cooking the foie gras.
Wow.
Then you are going to get the menu later for you.
Oh, wow.
You are going to get the lobster and the Brittany crabs. That means that you get like the crabs with mayonnaise, like we call in the state, in the beetroot ravioli, thin slice of beetroot on the lobster on the top. Then you get the season, you see, the sea scallops. You get the big sea scallops from Brittany, where I come from.
Yeah.
It's the best sea scallop that you can get in the world, except from the men in, from the main in New York.
Okay.
You get the nice sea scallops too.
We do, yeah.
With the seasonal vegetables on this, you get the beurre blanc sauce, typical sauce from France. Then you get the chestnut pumpkin. It's the season too.
For chestnuts and pumpkin.
It's not for you in the state next week. The
Thanksgiving, a couple of weeks.
Yeah. With the wild mushrooms. Wow. And then you get the wildschank cooked for a long time, you know, on itself with the mashed potato puree with black truffles mushrooms.
Sounds like a lot.
No, it's served in half portion, so you can eat everything.
That's wonderful.
And then you finish with the dessert, figs and chocolate.
Wow, figs and chocolate. I've never had that combination. That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, Cedric, you've been a wonderful guide to the family of the Guy Savoy, and also to this restaurant. We're going to enjoy this wonderful lunch, and it was a delight meeting you.
Me too. It's a long time that I'm...
Okay, yeah. Peter's asking. Do you want to ask?
Well, we certainly should conclude by letting Cedric tell us how people can find Bouquinistes who are not familiar with Paris. For us, it was easy because we've been here before. It's also interesting because before we came on this recording, we asked Cedric who comes here, and he had an interesting answer.
Who comes here?
Yes.
All the people from the world, you know, all the tourists that come in Paris to see the beautiful city that we're having, but especially the American people. We're having a lot of American people from here, and especially the people from New York. We got like few years ago now very nice articles in the papers that you're having, the New York Times, made by a great author.
It wasn't Gail. Somebody in the New York Times, Frank Bruni.
Yeah.
Frank Bruni, yeah. So you got a good review.
Yeah,
so
that's,
now it's bringing
that's,
in
that's why.
The New York eaters.
And then Guy Savoy just opened like a place in Vegas at the Caesar Palace. So all the people in the world knows Guy Savoy, so that's why we...
That's it.
And we are very cosmopolite.
Very cosmopolitan, okay. Yeah. And give us your website, if you would.
We are at lesbouquinistesguysavoy.com.
Okay, that is...
If you go to the website, you...
Yeah, just go to GUYSAVOY.com, GuySavoy.com. Well, this is good, and I think everybody will be coming here after we air the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for meeting you. Thank you.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Now, for well over a year, our friends Bridget and Michael Rutenberg, who have an apartment near this restaurant, have been raving about this restaurant. And sure enough, we finally arrived as visitors, and we came to Pramille, and it was wonderful. What we're doing now is we're talking to the owner, chef owner, Alain Pramille. Hello, Alain.
Hello.
You have a very interesting background. You are from the southwest of France. This restaurant right now that we're in is a couple of years old, and it's in 3rd arrondissement in Paris. You started out actually as a physics teacher. Now, tell us about that.
Yes, I was a teacher for years, and I stopped being teaching around my 30s, and I went to New York and was cooking in a restaurant called Café de la Gare. And then I came back to Paris, and I go back to my teaching habit for years. And 2 years ago, I started to open my restaurant.
Uh-huh. And you love it.
Yes, I love it, and I enjoy it very much.
Well, I mean, I think that's just an amazing jump from being a physics teacher, being a cook in a restaurant. I mean, why that? Why did you want to do a restaurant?
Oh, always. I always like to cook, and I always like to
eat
also, but I like to share.
Uh-huh.
To share things like that. And I always be interested in into cooking, into food. When I'm traveling around the world, the first things I go to the market and to see what is the product and what is the habit. And I'm interested in the cooking stuff.
Well, listeners, he is a man with a large heart and an expansive personality. So I see why you'd be attracted to sharing over good food. Now, this is a dream, your own restaurant. This is your very first own restaurant.
Yes.
And it is your name. I mean, at first it sounds like it's going to be an Indian restaurant, Pramil.
Yes, I went through internet and I said, well, there's a lot of Pramil in India. And, well, this is a name from southwest of France. It's a very local name. So I didn't know it was so spread around the world. They I don't know, but I think no connection between my family, my family and Indian.
Ah, but you don't think so?
No, I don't think so. I went through my background and said it's very local.
Now, you call your cuisine bistro cuisine. Explain what you mean by that.
Bistro cuisine is a cuisine simple first and be in touch with a tradition. It is not fusion. It's not food with how to say that? To be too much regionalist.
Not too original. Following tradition.
Yes. And also, it's something we get you cook the ingredient with simplicity.
Now, you have a fairly solid bistro menu here. Things that one would expect coming to a bistro. Now, but is the chestnut, cream of chestnut with the glass of foie gras, is that traditional?
No, really.
That was not traditional.
No. We have a base of bistro traditional, but we have like a step on the side. We do things a little bit different in my own way.
Now, tell us another dish that you do your own way. This is a traditional bistro dish.
It's like cake au chou-fleur, a cauliflower cake.
Yeah, what is that? We didn't have that.
It's cooked with cauliflower. It makes a big success. And it's served with pimiento jam.
Really?
Yes, and people love.
Well, that's very creative.
Yeah, I don't know.
Atlanta, but, it's very different, very unusual. So it's an exciting restaurant, too.
Oh, thank you.
I had something more traditional, I think, the rognon de veau, veal kidneys with snails.
Yeah, that's not traditional at all.
No, but I loved it.
Veal kidney.
Well, each individually would be traditional, but together it's not
together,
traditional.
And we cook the snails and the veal kidney very... without sauce, without cream, direct on the taste of the kidney and the snails. And it works very well.
Oh, it did. It was delicious, absolutely delicious. I can't remember what Peter had. Yes, he had the sweetbreads. Aha. Uh-huh.
Yes, yeah, there's some sauce. Riz de veau, sweetbread.
Yes, and what kind of sauce is it?
It was cooked with a small turnip.
Oh, okay.
And the sauce based on cedar. I say that in English, cider?
Cider.
Cider, yes.
There's almost no cream in it.
And there's some cream in it, yes. And the texture of the turnips and the riz de veau works very well.
Yes. Oh, and what did Michael have?
Yes, okay. With a wild mushroom called sepa.
Oh, that's right, the wine mushroom.
Yes.
And now the season is changing, and so you will be changing. What comes on first is one of the specialties of your region.
Oh, yes, going to come first, and some people wait for it, is the cassoulet. That's very traditional, and we make it in a traditional way.
You do everything step by step.
Yes, everything, and we do everything here. So, I mean, from the starters to the dessert, we do everything in the restaurant.
Oh, that's amazing.
And the cassoulet...
it takes time and patience.
It takes time, yes. It takes 3 days before serving it.
Then do you have help in the kitchen?
Yes, I have one help in the kitchen. I'm cooking myself, and I have a helper. One now is a girl.
Okay. And what about desserts? You make all those in-house. What are your special desserts?
One of the special is a traditional one is called nougat glacé. And
that's
making
a nougat?
From the beginning. I mean, we roast we grill the seeds and we make it step by step until the end. And it's...
I still can't. I mean, I know you're in New York from 1981 to 1985, but you certainly picked up practically a whole lifetime of experience understanding cooking. And your English is excellent. Congratulations on that.
No. I'm losing my vocabulary.
Oh, well, we'll have to come back and eat more food so we can do
yes.
that. Now, let's let the listeners have an idea of I said you were in the third arrondissement. The convenient thing, my friend Bridget says, is to give the closest metro station.
Yes, the closer one is Temple.
Okay.
And that also we're not very far, Arts et Métiers. Al Zemiti, which is on different lines because the temple is only on one line.
Okay. Now, Peter has a question.
Well, there's another rather well-known restaurant just down the street.
Oh, yes.
So, so listeners, if your bank balance won't allow it, or they're too busy, which they frequently are, there's a little place called L'Ami Louis, which is not even an American block down the street. And I can tell you because we have been to L'Ami Louis, it's a very good bistro. Pramil is also a very good bistro, and there is a sizable difference in what it will cost you. So something less than a second mortgage on your house will get you through dinner here. The daily menu is very modestly priced. I think is about 30 euros.
Yes, it's 31 euros, 3 courses.
I mean, so you can't beat that. Whatever the conversion rate is, I don't give it to you because by the time this broadcast will have changed. Tell us a little bit also about wines. You have a special arrangement with a wine cellar across the street.
Yes,
and then you're building a wine list of your own.
Yes.
Also.
Well, first we have a wine list and we propose different wine, like bio wine and biodynamic and some wine direct from the producer. And we are very reasonable on prices.
That's ingenious, you know.
And plus we have very good relation with Rick. He came from your country.
Uh-huh.
And he is a cavist across the street and you can buy a bottle at Rick place and open it to have like a large choice.
Well, do you have a last word for our listeners about your restaurant and coming here?
Yes, we like to when the door open and when people are coming, we're very glad to join. They join us and we are very glad when they arrived and when they leave, they're very smiley and for us it's very interesting.
And you're open what days?
We open Tuesday through Saturdays for lunch and dinner, plus the Sunday for dinner.
Well, I think it's delightful, and I think you are, and I thank you also for taking the time, because I know you're busy, to talk to us and to come in on your day off.
Yes, it was a pleasure.
And to the next time.
Yes, next time for dinner or lunch.
Thank you so much, Alain.
Thank you.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
It's a true honor to have the time from this wonderful man, Hervé Tisse, who is a physical chemist who's very big in the culinary world because of his studies with kitchen science. In fact, Hervé, did you not coin the phrase molecular gastronomy?
Well, the story is that, you know, people looking about science in the kitchen is a very old story, because even Denis Papin in London centuries ago introduced the pressure cooker. Called the digester. It was in London because he's a French guy who was in London. And then there were Lavoisier, the famous chemist, for the father of modern chemistry, studied how to make a stock, meat stock. So looking at what you do in the kitchen by science is old. But it's true that after the Second World War, you had people that were interested in the chemical composition in carrots, in wheat, in corn, and so on. And it's true that this is useless knowledge for people who cook. And there were other people in science doing studies on industrial processes. But daily, when you cook at home, you had no science to help you. Why are the soufflés swelling? You don't know. Why sometimes the mayonnaise fails? You don't know how to avoid it. And with Nicolas Curti, Nicolas began experiments in the probably 60s.
He was Austrian-Hungarian?
He was Hungarian. He studied science in Paris at La Sorbonne in 1917. Then he moved back to Berlin. And in Berlin, he was chased by the anti-Jewish laws. So he moved to Oxford. And then he worked all his life long in Oxford.
From Oxford.
He was a fellow of Brasenose College in Oxford. He was a fellow of the Royal Society, was the discoverer of the special methods for very low temperature cooling, let's say. And
everyone speaks of him in hallowed terms. He earned a great deal of respect.
Nicolas was someone very strange. He was a small guy, always sparkling, always trying to introduce some science in daily life. And when we met, it was incredible. A girl was the press officer of Pour la Science, which is the French edition of Scientific American, where I worked for 20 years. Indeed, I had two lives. Since 1980, I was using my lab at home to investigate old wife tales, culinary old wife tales.
Now, why were you drawn to this?
Oh, because in the 16th of March 1980, I was doing a Roquefort cheese soufflé, and the recipe was saying add the yolks 2 by 2. And I decided that it was useless, so I decided to add the yolks all together. And the soufflé was a failure. And I was very lucky that it was a failure. Because the next Sunday evening, so it was the 23rd of March, 1980, I had friends for dinner again. I decided to make the soufflé again and to improve. And reading the recipe, I was looking at the yolks 2 by 2, and I said to myself, well, perhaps this is the reason. And if the 2 by 2 method is better than the all together method, then the 1 by 1 should be better. And I tried the 1 by 1, and the soufflé was better. And then I remember very well the 21st of March, I opened a notebook and said, now I will collect culinary old wife tales and I will test all of them and I will try to make science out of cooking. And when I met Nicolas in 1986, by phone, we got immediately intimate friends. It was fascinating because the second we spoke, we were friends because we had the same passion. And the next week, he moved from Oxford to Paris. He came on purpose for just seeing me. And we had a wonderful lunch not far from here at it was Rue Racine chez Maître Paul, a poule au vin jaune et au mori, chicken with Jura wine and Morillas. I remember the meal. We were discussing the story. And in 1988, then we decided that we had to create some science. And there was a question of the name, how should we call it? And we decided at that time for molecular and physical gastronomy.
Right.
Here
and
is the story.
If you want to carry the story further, you decided that was too long a name.
Oh yes, in the beginning, we completely agreed with gastronomy because gastronomy does not mean cooking for rich people. It means knowledge. So a gastronomic restaurant is no meaning. It's like a square circle. it cannot exist. It's like Father Christmas. A square circle does not exist. Gastronomy is really a knowledge. So you can have historical gastronomy or geographical gastronomy or economical gastronomy. And of course, in science, you have some particular gastronomy. The proposal during the discussion was that, you know, there was biology, and after 1934, because of Warren Weaver, an American scientist, director of the NIH, they decided to create the molecular biology. And we had the same idea, so we decided for molecular gastronomy, but Nicolas was a physicist. And being a physicist, he wanted to say that some phenomena in cooking are not only molecular. It's true that when you make a soufflé, the soufflé is swirling. It's just water evaporation responsible for the swirling. This is not chemistry. This is physics. And Nicolas insisted for having molecular and physical gastronomy. But it was very, very long. It was boring to say molecular and physical gastronomy. And moreover, I'm distributing the idea that when you say a word that with more than 3 syllables, generally it's because someone is trying to sell to you something. And then it was too long. So when Nicolas died, first of all, I was deeply sorrow. I don't know the word in English. I'm sorry.
Sad.
Oh, it was more than sad.
Sad.
And I wanted to make his memory alive. And this is why I gave the name of Nicolas to the Erice International Workshop that we were organizing together. And
the to Erice Sicily.
Yeah, Erice Sicily, yes. Because I knew that it was only something between the two of us having the unphysical on top of the molecular, I decided to drop to molecular. And at the same time, more or less, I decided that we should make a clear distinction between science and cooking. So no chef is doing molecular gastronomy. You do that only in labs with scientists. It's science. And of course, chefs are not cooking. So and chefs are doing some activity. If this activity is using new tools, new equipments, new hardware, new ingredients, new method, then it's an application of molecular gastronomy. And I proposed to the media, because this was the question, and to the chef, to call it molecular cooking.
And so that's what we're supposed to be doing now, molecular cooking.
Molecular cooking. And nowadays, they moved more or less, some of them decide for techno-emotional cooking, but it's the same.
It's called what?
Techno-emotional.
Oh, shoot. No. That's really complicated.
And more than three syllables.
And more than three syllables.
But it's true that chefs have something to sell.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
We say art, culinary art. Yes, but they sell it.
Now, this is not just science for science's sake. This whole adventure is going into the kitchen, and most famously at a very well-known restaurant in Paris, where the chef and owner is a very good friend of yours.
Well, the question of molecular gastronomy, it's science. It does not know in the kitchen, and I should not participate to any application of it. I realize that.
Well, how do you interact with Pierre Gagnier?
First of all, I have to explain, and Pierre knows what I shall say. You know, I want to change the way people cook. This is the idea that we had with Nicolas. The world. So
now
I'm
why?
Crazy.
And that's my question.
Oh, for many reasons. Just one example. When you cook on a stove, you spoil 80% of the energy you use. 80%. So you spoil it. It means that you eat the atmosphere, you eat the climate. Billions of people daily eat the climate. This is only an example, but you spoil the ingredients generally. You don't make the best use of it. So there is an old word, we're not very fashionable, domestic economy. Very okay. Important. We are not so rich that we can spoil our environment.
Right.
So there is a question. Moreover, when you use a whisk in the kitchen, the whisk is a middle-aged tool.
Yes,
There is no reason to use a whisk. And I'm saying a whisk, it could
but
be
you
a...
You said a bicycle pump.
Or anything. this is technically doomed. So there are many reasons for changing the way people cook. When you want to do it, you cannot succeed because people want to cook as they cooked when they were young. This is rooted in the human beings. So the question is, if you want to make a change, you have to be rhetorically smart. And there is Parmentier introduced the potato in France. How did he do? He offered to the king a flower of potato. So the king was having the flower of potato. The public was looking at the king and saying, wow, if the king is eating potato, it should be good. And then, in one generation, France, the whole country, was eating potatoes. This is called fashion. When imagine that you give a new skirt or shirt or clothes to Madonna. Madonna is having the piece of clothes. And today, everybody will have the same. So if you give to Pierre Gagnier some invention, some application of science, then Pierre Gagnier is using them. I'm saying Pierre Gagnier, but it could be Ferran Adrià, Estelle Blumenthal, all these people. They are, the top people are doing something new, and the public wants what they do. And this is a way I'm using Pierre Gagnaire as a tool of communication for changing the world from the culinary point of view.
But what you say that these chefs use your ideas to sell what they're selling. But, I mean, is there such a thing as going too far? Like, did you ever eat at Moto in Chicago?
Yeah, yeah.
And he cooks the tuna with industrial strength laser?
Well, wonderful.
You like that?
Yeah, sure. There is always a fear that molecular cooking will be something awful. And we want our old roasted chicken, let's say. I should say, don't be afraid first. Because, you know, in music, we had Johann Sebastian Bach first. Then, at some point, a small guy called Mozart arrived, and this guy was a hippie, he was a beatnik, he was a punk. And after one century, instead of having only Bach, we had Mozart and Bach. Mozart did not whip Bach away. And then we had Bach, Mozart, and Beethoven. And then we had Bach, Mozart, Beethoven, and Debussy. And then we had Bach, Mozart. So any new thing in culture is not eliminating the other. It's increasing the possibilities. And this is what we want, to be free. We want more possibilities because we have the choice. If you want to hear Mozart now, you can hear Mozart, but the next day, even if you love Mozart, the next day you can hear Debussy. Imagine eating roasted chicken or choucroute or cassoulet all day life. It would be boring. So I want to have the Motos cooking or Grant Achat's cooking or Wiley Dufresne cooking.
Yeah,
or
I haven't seen his new book yet. We're trying to get
it. I want all of that, of course.
But we nobody can not, do it
we
at
should,
home.
We should not stay to the old. Tradition is very strange. You know, very funny story. Tradition. The world has no meaning. My children, since they are born, I'm making ice cream sherbet with liquid nitrogen. Recently, we went to a restaurant where the chef was very proud of making. They did not look because they are not interested. For them, it's traditional because I transmitted. And this is the etymology. Tradition transmitted. I transmitted to my two sons the idea that we can make an ice cream with liquid nitrogen. So it's not new. For them, it's not new.
Right. But you know, all this equipment is pretty expensive. Like the
No. It's not expensive.
Not that one, but I'm talking about the sous vide equipment, for example, the heated circulator.
You know, it's expensive when you build a machine for a whole restaurant. But if you build a machine for a kitchen, it's not expensive. No.
I want one of those machines.
Yeah, you should. But you know, for example, when you boil a sauce, imagine you make a wine sauce.
Right.
So you have to boil to reduce it. Wow, it is very, very expensive. You have to pay for the electricity, for the energy for boiling. There is an osmosis membrane to do the same job. Much more efficient.
What do you think will be the next thing? For example, the induction cooking?
Oh, sure, certainly.
That's fabulous.
We should all have that because instead of spoiling 80% of the energy, you spoil only 20. The price of oil will increase because there will be no oil soon. Perhaps it will be in 2050, I don't know, but there will be no oil soon. At that time, how are we going to cook? The energy, the price of energy will be important, and our behaviors in the kitchen will change.
Well, I mean, clearly this is more about other bigger issues than it is just about being experimental and causing a stir in the kitchen, which people seem to pick up on for molecular gastronomy. You've written all these books. Do you have a website where people can come and get all your books?
No, I have no time. You know, I'm working hard to produce new knowledge. So having a website. No.
Well, we have some
but
of the books
on our
website.
You can type on Google Hervétis and you find everything. So it's all right.
Okay, and that's Hervétis. And it's really interesting, listeners, and it's really easy to understand. And, you know, Hervé, you may have the key to this terrible energy drain that we've been having on our planet. I can't thank you enough for coming on the menu.
Thank you for coming to Paris.
Yeah, and yes, and keep us posted, and I'd love to talk to you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this trip down memory lane with On the Menu, and we'll be back with an exciting new program again, same time, same place next week. So we hope you'll join us then. In the meantime, bye-bye.